Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Stu does America.
Welcome to the program. Jason Buttrill, Steve Baker going to join us in a little bit. But I wanted to start basically with this nonsense with Kamala Harris. We're going to do the Kamala Harris rehabilitation tour because that's what she's out there doing right now. I guess maybe trying to line herself up for another run at something. It's hard to know exactly what she's up to. Maybe just trying to sell some books. Harris stops biting her tongue in 107 days. Her book about last year's campaign against Trump. Here's the cover. They really did a lot on this one. They spent a lot of time on it. Actually, they didn't at all. It's just the text on the blue cover. 107 Days by Kamala Harris. And I will say, there's been enough buzz about this book, not because that it's good or anything, but there's been enough gossip and her bad explanations that I kind of wanted to read it a little bit. Like, I can't imagine myself actually sitting down and reading the entire book, but I did think maybe an audiobook. And then I thought to myself, actually, she's probably reading it, isn't she? Like, if there was a professional voice actor reading this book, maybe I'll go through it. If it's her, I just can't take it. I can't possibly take it. By the way, Simon & Schuster has produced this, and it says about the book, for the first time with surprising and revealing results or insights, former President Kamala Harris tells the story of one of the wildest and most consequential presidential campaigns in American history. And then they give you this, and this is italicized to build the drama for the book. Your Secret Service code name is Pioneer. You were the first woman in history to be elected Vice President of the United States. On July 21st, 2024, your running mate Joe Biden announces that he will not be seeking re-election. The presidential election will occur on November 5th, 2024. You have 107 days. Like a horrible episode of 24. We've been over her terrible reasoning on some of this, but I want to go through some of her arguments being made right now. But first, let me give you the reception she's getting around the media. Here she is waddling out on The View.
We have things to talk about.
Wherever you go now.
A lot of people are coming up to me crying, actually.
Crying. Yeah.
Yeah, crying. She's crying. People are crying. Well, they're crying because they're just so disappointed in all these dictators that have been elected since it could have been Kamala. Now, Joe Biden is not happy with this book rollout. I don't know if you know this. Angry and disappointed, Kamala Harris, critical of Joe Biden in a new book. Joe's not happy with Kamala. Kamala's not happy with Joe. Now, she was asked whether Joe Biden could have run for president. Of course, he was running for president. They told us that he was completely fine the entire time until they said, oh, obviously he's not fine. And of course, that's why we switched to Kamala. Kamala's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Trust us this time. Here she is talking about this period with Good Morning America.
My concern about him running for re-election was completely separate from my admiration and knowledge about his capacity to serve as president of the United States, which was consistent and never wavered.
Well, when we sit here, as we sit here today, do you think he would have been up for running the country for four more years?
Here's the distinction that I make. And having had the experience myself, it is one thing to have the capacity to govern. It is another thing to go through an election for president of the United States. So you are an athlete. You may appreciate this kind of metaphor. Running for president of the United States is like being in a marathon at a sprinter's pace with people throwing tomatoes at you every step you take. It is not for the lighthearted. It takes an incredible amount of endurance and stamina. And can you imagine doing it while you are also carrying literally the weight of the world as being president of the United States? So the distinction I make is about capacity to be president and what that election would require in that campaign, especially running against Donald Trump.
Wait, so she's saying it's harder to run for president than be president? That's her case? That is a bizarre argument. You're talking about managing the world's nuclear weapons. You're talking about multiple conflicts going on at any given time. By the way, part of your responsibility as president of the United States has to do with overseeing a country and hoping for some civility through an election process. I mean, you're involved in that as president anyway. Even if you're not running, you're still involved in it in some tangential way. Again, she doesn't think these things out, I don't think, very well before she gets in front of the person. I also, so running a campaign is like running a marathon at a sprinter's pace while they're throwing tomatoes at you. What's being president like? A wonderful stroll through the park? It seems like she's making the case very, very strange. Of course, and I remember, there's a bunch of moments over my life that I will remember doing this show. The moment where the Obamacare decision came out while we were live on the air. I remember, of course, some of the stuff around 9/11. I was on the air one day when a plane crashed into a building in Florida. It was right after we got off the air here where the Charlie Kirk situation happened. There's a bunch of moments you'll remember. One of the moments I will remember from politics probably my entire life was watching in real time as Kamala Harris goes on The View and they ask her the question, hey, like, what would you do differently than President Biden? And I saw her answer and immediately knew this was going to be the biggest thing in the campaign. It was like, oh my God, was that really her answer in this moment? It was. She's now saying, what if I could remix and rehash and redo that moment? Here she is talking about it.
I should have answered that question better for a number of reasons. Part of the problem is I really did not fully embrace the reality of how people felt. And I should have. I felt, without being defensive, I felt that to answer the question would be to require that I criticize the president.
Yeah.
Joe Biden.
Yes. It would have.
I wasn't running against Joe Biden.
Doesn't matter.
I should have understood where people are, and I should have dealt with that differently, And I also thought, by the way, the differences were so obvious. So I also didn't understand that. But I should have articulated it, right? We are of a different generation, different background, different life experiences.
That doesn't matter.
I'll tell you, part of that perhaps led to, you know, one of the differences in terms of, as I reflect on it, how I would have done things differently.
This woman is infuriating. She didn't say anything there. There was no answer to that at all. That your ages are different? That's your answer? That's what she tried to do, by the way, in the moment. I think everyone knows that I'm different than Joe Biden. I think people can see that. Yet we know you're two different human beings. We are aware of that. What would you do different as far as policy goes? Is there any policy difference? Is there any approach difference? Is there anything at all? Her answer to that was no. And still seems to be no. She still can't give an answer to the question. Fascinating. And you know what? It would require you to be critical of President Biden. Because you're saying you would do things differently. That might not mean that you have to say he's a bad president or even that he's completely incoherent. You might not even have had to admit that, though it probably would have been a good idea to show that you're in touch with reality. However, as she very clearly said there, she did not embrace the reality of the situation, which is very true. That's the one thing that she said was actually accurate there. But like, you have to be able to say, look, yes, I think President Biden did this, this, and this wrong. Here's how I would have done it right. I think he had good motivations there, but I didn't like his approach on this. He suggested this. This is what I would do differently. Now, of course, all of her differences probably would have been like, I would have disliked Jews more, but still, at least she could have said something. Here she is with absolutely no idea about even recent history.
We had a president of the United States running for re-election, 3.5 months from the election, decides not to run. The sitting vice president enters the race against a former president of the United States who's been running for 10 years with 107 days to go. And it ended up being the closest presidential election in the 21st century.
Just dutiful nod there, of course, from Rachel Maddow, who doesn't even question the fact that she's saying it is the closest election in the 21st century. It is not the closest election in the 21st century. You might remember the 2000 Bush-Gore election which was decided by 537 votes. That one kind of an important one as well. You also might remember, now remember, the Trump election was 229,766 votes when it comes to the popular vote. Trump won by that amount. Of course, Biden actually won the popular vote in 2020, but by only 42,000. Trump actually lost the election as far as closeness goes in the popular vote, but about 77,000 votes needed to switch hands to make him win. That was a closer election as well. The Bush election in 2004 versus John Kerry was also closer than the Kamala Harris. The only ones that were bigger margin were 2008 and 2012 with Obama winning. Those are the only two. Every other election has been more close than the Kamala Harris election with Donald Trump. So that's just another thing you remember. Now, we did go into that election, as I told you at the time, with about seven swing states. All of them were pretty close. You know, the way that you kind of look at it, you want to make it look as close as possible. I've discussed it this way before. You had all these swing states. Well, Kamala Harris needed to win those blue wall states, and the biggest blowout of those was 2 points. I think it was 1.8 points in Pennsylvania was the biggest blowout of those states. So it was a close election. It's important to remember that. It was way too close for comfort, but it wasn't nearly as close as other elections that we've seen. She did not like losing the election, apparently. She was very upset about it. Despite her terrible performance, here she is discussing how that made her feel.
That night, I grieved. Mm-hmm. In a way that I have not since my mother died.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it was, the pain was, it was not at all about losing a race.
Yeah, it was.
I knew what it was gonna mean for the country. Uh-huh. I was gonna say for the family. Yeah. And that's how I felt for the country.
Right. We were grieved,
I knew what it was gonna mean.
Yeah.
But I knew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And all I could say over and over again is, my God, my God, my God.
Oh.
It was very difficult. I know everyone, many people experienced it in different ways.
I mean, she, again, doesn't say anything. Does she ever say anything in these clips? She's not saying anything there. She said she was sad, and then she said, I said, my God, my God, my God, over and over again. Which is fascinating, considering many different aspects of that particular election. Okay, so she also went on and ranted about, this is with Rachel Maddow. Now, you play You Make the Call on this one. Do you think that she's calling Trump a communist dictator here? They're trying to say, no, she wasn't saying he was a communist dictator. It's kind of how I take it, at least by seeing it on, in texts, which is where I've read it. Give me your call on this. Do you think she's actually calling Trump a communist dictator, or she's comparing historical eras?
A tyrant. We used to compare the strength of our democracy to communist dictators. That's what we're dealing with right now in Donald Trump. And these titans of industry are not speaking up.
I mean, I just feel like that's exactly what she, because they're in the transcript, it says that's what we're dealing with right now, period. Donald Trump and these titans. When you hear her say it, she says, that's what we're dealing with right now in Donald Trump, period. That's how she broke that sentence up. So I 100% think she was calling him a communist dictator. Now, I am not a fan of communist dictators. I think they're really bad. If Trump were one, I would not like it. Occasionally, he steps over certain lines that I don't appreciate, even as the president of the United States, with maybe a little bit more executive power than is my particular vision of the country. That being said, there's really not much to point to him being a communist. It's a pretty weird, I mean, I don't remember this much deregulation in Stalin's era. Really, really strange accusation. Now, if your idea is I'm calling him a communist dictator because Trump is bad and communism is bad, well, I can at least be a little bit excited that you've been able to wake up to that one, because it seems like you've been trying to push that one through for a while. Finally, this is maybe my favorite moment of this fledgling tour. Harris says Buttigieg was her first choice for running mate. You might say, okay, well, you know, she's kind of trying to bail herself out of the Tim Walz choice. Everybody knows that was one of the dumbest things that anyone has ever done in the history of human beings. And I would generally agree with that analysis. But her basic answer for the Mayor Pete thing was to say, well, I didn't put him on the ticket because he was gay, and I was afraid all the Americans, they're all racists and homophobes, and they wouldn't elect him because he was gay. Then she went on Rachel Maddow's show, who is gay, And she had to answer to that. And again, I don't think she says one actual thing here, but watch.
I guess I'd ask you to just elaborate on that a little bit. It's hard to hear.
Yeah.
With you running as, you know, you're the first woman elected vice president. You're a black woman and a South Asian woman elected to that high office, very nearly elected president. To say that he couldn't be on the ticket effectively because he was gay is hard to hear.
No. That's not what I said.
Yeah, it was.
That he couldn't be on the ticket because he is gay.
Yes, it was.
My point, as I write in the book, is that I was clear that in 107 days, in one of the most hotly contested elections for president of the United States, against someone like Donald Trump, who knows no floor, to be a black woman running for president of the United States, and as a vice presidential running mate, a gay man, with the stakes being so high, it made me very sad, but I also realized it would be a real risk.
Right, so you're just backing up.
No matter how, you know, I've been an advocate and an ally of the LGBT community my entire life. So it wasn't about any prejudice on my part, but
we had such a short
period of time. And the stakes were so high.
See, I'm not saying I didn't put him on the ticket because he's gay. I'm saying I did put him on the ticket because the stakes were too high for me to allow a gay person on the ticket. That's the clarification by Kamala. I maintain this, by the way, that the only person I've ever heard of in my entire life to admit that they did not hire a person because they were gay is Kamala Harris. Now, I understand that many others have probably done so. But in reality, most people don't admit that. She just came out and wrote a book about how she didn't pick him because he was gay. Now, she says it's not her prejudice. She says it's her prejudice about how prejudiced the rest of the country is, which in some ways is actually worse, I think, because you're not, it's not that it's one person who's, a homophobe. You're saying, 80 million, 100 million people are homophobes. So I think it's actually worse, but that's her attempt to sell you this book. You gonna buy it? 107 days in stores now or soon. I don't really know. I haven't looked it up yet. But check out the book, and if you do read it, please tell me more about what's in it, because I can't bring myself to open it. If you're waking up feeling groggy or dragging through the day or just stuck in a cycle of bad sleep, first you could try to maybe read Kamala's book, because that would probably definitely put you to sleep. But I would say there's a better way. Beams Dream Powder. You're going to like this stuff. It's healthy, science-backed nighttime blend that is basically designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed, right? Not groggy. It's built right here in America by people who actually believe in hard work and integrity and results. Exactly the kind of business we should be supporting. It tastes great, it's easy to use, and it's already delivered more than 17 million better nights of sleep for people who are done settling for mediocrity. Some of those nights in my very home. When you sleep better, you live better. And here's the deal. Beam is giving listeners to this particular program the ultimate Patriot discount, up to 40% off. By trying their best-selling Dream Powder and get 40% off right now for a limited time. You just got to go to shopbeam.com/stew. Use the code stew at checkout. It's shopbeam.com/stew. Use the code stew for up to 40% off right now. Sleep better, wake up stronger, and show up ready for your family, for your work, and for your country, because when you're well-rested, you're unstoppable. And this country needs more people like that right now. It's shopbeam.com/stew, promo code stew.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Joined now by Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, thanks for coming on the program. We had some breaking news earlier this morning, right before the radio show started, of a shooting here in Dallas at an ICE facility. It was interesting to see the news break, because you had the initial thought of it's a nice facility. Obviously, I mean, the first thought is going to be a left wing shooter. Then there was a big influx of people saying, no, it was people who were detainees being shot. That means it was a right wing shooter. Mm-hmm. And then we find out from the police and FBI kind of the same story that we thought of at the beginning. Is that the way you followed the story as well?
Yeah. And I will say, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about it this morning on radio. And I think you guys, you very much took the right approach to it, because we didn't have all the information.
Yeah.
It's sad to say that most of these are going in the direction of where we initially think they're going, which is some kind of, you know, left wing attack. Mm-hmm. That is definitely, that's the norm over the past few months.
Sure seems like it.
But I mean, we're entering very dangerous times where these attacks are happening primarily from the left lately. But I feel like they're, you know, part of the plan that they're going for is to kind of induce this Bubba effect response.
Mm.
And that's what they're goading people that would be considered on the right into these, you know, retaliations.
Yeah, explain that, because the Bubba effect is something Glenn's talked about quite a bit, but it's basically antagonizing eventually the right,
yeah,
into some sort of horrible response to
right.
these things, right?
Yeah, so the Bubba effect is, you know, and you can understand it is what makes it so dangerous.
Mm.
But we've seen, you know, the imbalance in the justice system happen over the past, you know, decade or whatever that's been going on. We see radical left-wing rioters be called peaceful protesters, and nothing ends up happening with it. They'll go to jail. You'll see politicians advocate on social media for them, you know, for defense funds to get them out of jail. And we're like, wait a minute, they just burned down a car dealership. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about this. People elected you into office. They're, you know, it's a very top-down, bottom-up, thing that's going on right now. But though, in the Bubba effect, you get just regular people that are like, wait a minute. If nothing is going to happen, if law and order is not going to happen, then it is my duty to therefore take up, you know, this duty and then seek justice any way I can think of.
And hopefully we don't get to that point.
Hopefully.
We're not at it now. And this is what's really, it might cross that threshold. You never know when a crazy person from either side is going to do something.
Yeah.
But we are seeing continual left-wing violence going on right now. And a lot of it, I think, organized, right? Like, these are organized around these Antifa groups. They're talking about, making Antifa, I know Trump has already signed this on making Antifa a terrorist group. Is this the right approach to try to take out these organizations?
Absolutely. I think that I haven't read in depth the full executive order that was yesterday.
Yeah.
But I remember looking at that when the president first mentioned it, and there did need to be some, I guess, changes in the way they would write the executive order. So primarily they would have to make changes to make it, you know, legal for them to go after, like the funding apparatuses of,
yes,
of many of these organizations. But it opens up a whole nother web of ways to not only go after the people that do these attacks, but the people, one step, you know, back behind them, the people, you know, some facilitators, then one step back there. What money, where has it been coming from? What was it originally designed for? You've seen some of these, like, you know, funding, you know, like kind of like Data Republican, where they show all this like funding webs.
Mm-hmm.
This is out there. We've allowed it for far too long. I was just looking today on just kind of conceptualize how bad this is. Antifa was, you know, they've been publishing, they're not even afraid of it, publishing all of these instructions on how to, what they call, lead a resistance. What they're talking about is an insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
If you even, you know, whisper the word insurrection, if you were on the right, you know, or do something stupid, like stand somewhere with a sign, mm-hmm, that might have even been, you know, vaguely conceived as being, you know, for, you know, the rally that led to the storming of the Capitol on January 6th, then you would probably get the shock and awe effect and you would have your house raided by the FBI. Well, these people are actually doing an insurrection. They're publishing instructions on how to create no-go zones. This is a direct quote from one of their pamphlets. Create no-go zones for federal government law enforcement.
Mm.
What they're talking about is doing violence so that they feel scared to go into certain areas.
Right.
This is absolutely an insurrection. They are not scared to publish this information because no one's held them accountable. And people obviously are, there's obviously cash going towards these people in some way. I don't know if it's organized and, you know, huge donors, you know, like, you know, the usual suspects, some of their money, or if it's small people, just, I don't know. But it all has to be stopped. And this is a major problem right now because we've looked at, there's this attack that happened. We'll get more information on it. Another sniper attack. But we're also, another sniper attack at an ICE facility was at a few months ago down in Alvarado, again here in Texas. Mm-hmm. Another Antifa-style cell.
This one was had ties to trans ideology as well, right?
That one did, yeah.
Trantifa?
Yep, Trantifa.
Which is a great, I mean, it's a great name.
It is.
It's a great name.
Follow Andy Ngo from the Postmillennial.
Yes, he's great.
He is making the case right now on X that, you know, absolutely, these people are terror organizations. He's just laying it all out. I mean, the case seems very, very clear. But the thing that worries me is about, I was looking at the Alvarado ICE attack, and they're evolving how they do these things. Yeah. They're taking more like military-style attacks, like ambush-style attacks. And these are not advanced level. Like, you don't have to be like special forces to know these attacks. I mean, any basic military person that went through boot camp knows these kinds of attacks. And one of the alleged shooter, I think, was a Marine. I used to be a Marine. Mm. They're incorporating a lot of this. They're elevating and escalating their tactics. And now we're seeing follow-on that are very, very similar. I mean, I was shocked that I heard that the person actually took their own life after this most recent attack this morning. Because usually when you do like a sniper attack or something like that, you intend to try and get away.
Right. You're far enough away that you have an escape route. We even saw that, of course, in Utah. The guy actually did get away for quite some time.
Planned on it. He said in that one with the Charlie Kirk assassination, he planned on taking that. I think he said something that he would tell maybe his relatives, you know, when he's on his deathbed. That's he wanted to get away with it that far.
Yeah.
And not say anything.
Yeah. By the way, we have the photo of the bullet casings. This is one of the big pieces of evidence that has come out from Kash Patel. Specifically, and they said anti-ICE slogans. Actually, the word anti-ICE is written on the bullet. So that is what, at least part of what they found. And that is where we are right now in that investigation. I want to switch gears in the last 2 minutes here before we go of this other story that's not making as much news. I made the case yesterday. It's a much bigger news story than Jimmy Kimmel, which is this bizarre communications network in New York City that was uncovered by agents. That could theoretically have taken down the New York City communication system. Of course, this is all around, you know, revolving around the UN, at least timeline-wise. We don't know if it was specifically about the UN. Can you kind of, what should we know about the story?
Well, for one, our adversaries, the more and more technologically we get, you know, our enemies are finding ways to, you know, probe the vulnerabilities of that. There's so many different ways that they can attack us and harm us. And for far too long, we've been willing to let in people that we don't even into this country that we have no idea who they even are. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days, back like in the Cold War, every time someone that came in that we even suspected might have ties to like any kind of foreign intelligence service or someone that wanted to harm us, they were instantly identified when they came across the border, or even before that, when they got on a plane to come over to the United States or however, and they were immediately tracked by like the FBI. Mm-hmm. And if there was a facility like this, they would instantly know where it was at. They would try to take advantage of it. They would defeat it before they could even. These things were managed. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, this is almost impossible to do. I don't know who was involved with this. You know, with this potential attack.
I mean, because there's reporting that it was tied to China.
Could have been, but how many Chinese nationals have gone across our southern border in the past 8 years? Yeah. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We're doing things in this era, these kinds of attacks, there's a whole new era of asymmetrical warfare that's going on right now. You don't have to be an incredibly capable nation like China, like Russia, to pull off a major attack like that, because it's relatively, I mean, there's a lot of sophistication involved, but you can gather up enough SIM cards and routers and all this stuff to perform an attack like this, and you can be a Venezuela Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff going on with Venezuela right now. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of actually designated terror operatives within the United States, Tren de Agua group. Mm-hmm. How many of them are still in the country? I mean, and by the way, Venezuela learned espionage from the Cubans. The Cubans learned it from the KGB. Very, very capable. These are the kind of enemies that we're looking at right now. They can attack us with drones. They can attack us all sorts of ways. What is awful about what the Biden administration did to our country in the name of politics, in the name of trying to win over some bleeding heart, you know, sentiments, which they don't give a crap about immigrants. They don't care.
No.
You need to look at everything in this country, everything politically. And this is really on all sides, but mostly we're looking at, you know, the last 4 years of the country. But everything they do, everything they say they care about, erase that from your mind and think of it in terms of this lens. How does them making this case give them more control and power?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Nothing about feelings. Nothing about human rights. They could give a crap about human rights. What gives them more power and control? Is it an electorate? Is that what they want? Or is it just, you know, winning over a demographic of, you know, 18 to 49-year-old white women within the United States?
Mm.
Always that. But that's the danger that they've done to this country. That's what they've set us up for, these kinds of attacks. It's going to be a long road to harden our country before we can even feel safe again, I think. It's just going to take a while.
Yeah, it feels like we're just in a chaotic period. Jason Buttrell, head writer, researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
And I was thinking about this Jimmy Kimmel thing, and I was just like, I can't, I just want to rant about it constantly because it's driving me insane. And I thought, you know who might have something to say about government infringement on free speech and the First Amendment? Was Steve Baker, investigative journalist over here on Blaze News. He's an opinion contributor as well. Steve, I mean, do you have any opinions on free speech and the government interaction?
None whatsoever.
No?
No.
No, okay.
I don't even know why you had me on today.
All right, thanks for joining us. I'm Stu Berger. Now, Steve, I mean, what's frustrating me, I think, more than anything, is this standard being set by all these commentators. Right. Chris Hayes said it. I brought it up 1,000 times. And then last night, Jimmy Kimmel, he was on maybe Seth Meyers, one of the other late night shows. Jake Tapper goes on, and he says the exact same thing. Quote, it was pretty much the most direct infringement by the government on free speech that I've seen in my lifetime. Yep. The standard they are setting, as if they've completely ignored everything that's happened over the last decade, you are a direct example of the government going after someone on a First Amendment violation.
That's right.
Free speech and freedom of the press.
Well, and it began for me before January 6th because I was completely obliterated by, you know, these deplatformers on social media back when I was just a blogger, you know. Mm. And I was I had tens of thousands of followers of my blog, subscribers, and they just took me down because I didn't follow the COVID narrative. So mm-hmm. they were already attacking me in 2000. So by the time we got to January 6th, and this is the most important thing about January 6th, regardless of what anybody thinks about what I was doing that day, whether I was just a glorified trespasser or whether I was an insurrectionist. Ryan Riley from NBC News, he tweeted out the next day after my arrest. He said, if not for the words that Mr. Baker said before he got to the Capitol and after he left the Capitol, this case most surely would not have been brought, quote unquote.
And that's, I mean, obviously true. You were just standing there. I mean, you're being generous here, saying if you think I'm an insurrectionist, there is zero evidence you did anything like that. You're on video the entire time on your phone and taking video and writing. Like, that's all you were doing.
And then in my court hearing, because, you know, I refused to go through the shaming process of the trial. And interestingly, on a side note, and we haven't even talked about this, is 3 days before my November 12th court hearing in 2024, Matt Peterson, our editor-in-chief here at The Blaze, got a private message from Charlie Kirk. And he, because he was on the transition team,
right,
the president, and he sent a note, said, you know, Matt said, my guy, talking about me, is facing the judge on Tuesday. And Charlie said, it's already done, full pardon. I have the screenshot. I will keep it with me the rest of my life.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know he was involved in that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was able to go into that situation with full confidence that it that I knew what was coming. But interestingly, the judge knew what was coming as well, because after everything was said and done, he looked at the clerk and he says, okay, when is Mr. Baker's sentencing hearing going to be? And she types it up and she says, it's going to be on March the 6th at 10:30 a.m. And he goes, okay, Mr. Baker, since I'm probably not going to see you in March, he knew the pardons were coming as well. And he said, I'm going to, and he used the interesting word, he said, I'm going to therefore hazard to deliver to you my normal remarks that I would give during a sentencing hearing.
Okay.
And well, so
you didn't ask for that, by the way.
Right, right. And I have the transcript, and he spent the next 7 or 8 minutes dressing me down 100% for my journalism post January 6th rather than what I did that day. Never, never criticized one single action of mine on the day at the Capitol. Because he's seen the videos. He knew that I didn't do anything.
He criticized there. You weren't even the only, if you were the only journalist who went in there and took video, then maybe you could say, well, you shouldn't even cross in as a journalist. There were New York Times journalists there. There were all sorts of journalists there. They were inside. Yeah. They were doing the same thing you were doing. It was completely ridiculous from the beginning. And now to see this, where all of a sudden, the left is just like, oh gosh, we're big free speech warriors. All of a sudden, in this one case, with this one guy who was suspended for 4 days with pay, this guy who is on broadcast, and again, I can't stand the FCC. I wish it was just go away. My guess is you feel the same way on
exactly.
that one. I have to deal with this throughout my entire career. I don't want the FCC. But this is the one area of speech where they do have this carved out right, at least with our current understanding of the First Amendment, where they can do something about this or at least have some pressure on these agencies and these stations. When they were going to social media, they were going to podcasts, we just found out they were going to YouTube, the Biden administration, and banning specific speech and specific creators. This happened to you. It happened to Douglas Mackey. We talked to him yesterday. This has happened to Glenn Beck. This has happened all over. It happened to people who are currently, RFK Jr. is currently in the government. It happened to him.
Right.
This is insanity that they're asking us to just deny the fact that the last decade happened.
Exactly. You know, I go back just to the Twitter files. That's all you need to go back to. And at one point, we learned in the Twitter files and all those revelations is that Twitter itself had up to maybe even more 100 FBI and CIA agents officing in the Twitter building in San Francisco for this sole purpose of doing nothing but looking for unacceptable speech that needed to be pulled down. And then you had Jen Psaki, you know, going on the air and answering a question about, you know, the improper narratives that were on YouTube and on the internet and on Facebook. And she said, oh, yes, well, we just had a call with, you know, Facebook this morning, and we are reporting to them the accounts that we think are in violation or you know, using.
She said it outwardly.
She said it with her outside voice in the press press conference there at the White House, and it's like they forgot all of that. How
can it possibly be? It's mind-boggling, and we're supposed to sit here and act like this is a big deal. I've said this before. I favor a sort of a slap and hug approach. My version of that is, you do stuff like this, when they do stuff like this and they say, we're going to go after Kimmel, or you know, Brennan Carr makes comments saying we might go after Kimmel, whatever the pressure they feel is. If that happens, we pair it with the hug and we say, you know what? Here's legislation that says the FCC goes away completely.
Yeah.
Are you guys on board with us on this? And of course they're not going to be, because what they actually want is this power for themselves when they get in office. They don't care about censorship. They just don't want their voices censored.
And I went and watched Kimmel's apologetic, non-apology.
Yeah, you watched it too.
This morning, so that I could know what he said last night. Because otherwise, I'd never watch his show or Colbert or anybody anymore. You know, since Carson and Letterman are gone, what is there?
Right.
You know, and so what they don't understand, what they don't get, is that you can't go on the air. And of course, he was not critical of Charlie in his statement.
No, he
lied.
Wasn't. Yeah, he lied about it.
He lied about the source and the background of the killer. And what's going to happen in a situation like that is that all of these string of ABC affiliate stations who are not owned by Disney that happen to have all of their stations in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Are going to go,
complaints.
No, we're not going to carry you anymore.
Yeah.
And besides, you're losing us money anyway. Mm-hmm. We can't sell ads for you because your ratings suck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're like 750th in the rating, it's not a, that's not a great statement for your show and who you are. And then the model itself is a dinosaur anyway.
It is.
He's got hundreds of employees for that one show, probably dozens of writers that can't figure out how to write a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And with those hundreds of employees, compare that to the Rogans, to the Glenn Becks, to the newer models, and it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. You know, and like an approach like a Rogan or a Theo Von or somebody like that you'd put in that slot, Dave Landau, you know, that would make a lot of sense for one of these networks. It would be much cheaper and they'd probably make tons of money. It's not like you can't have someone in that slot being funny.
Right.
It's just the way they're doing it. I watched the Kimmel thing last night, and let me get your comments on just on this part. I felt, first of all, he did lie in the first statement, and I believe he lied about his lie last night. He said, well, I wasn't trying to put blame on either side, which is not true. And then he lied again, saying, we don't know which side this person was against. We do. We have plenty of information. If you're going to take a gander, you could know. I did feel, though, and I don't know, maybe he just fooled me. I did feel that his emotion around Charlie Kirk dying, it felt real to me. It happened to him twice. He talked about Erica as well. I don't know. What was your sense of that?
Well, when I saw it, my first reaction was, that was real.
Mm.
And then my, you know, my lizard brain kicked in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I was like, no, this has got to be a fake. He's an actor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it did seem real. But then it's like, okay, now I've got to get past my emotions and I've got to double down. And then I'm going to triple down on it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lie again.
I thought that was the problem with it. Like, I think he probably is a guy who doesn't want people murdered and for speaking out.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's not that guy. He was unable to bring himself to say, look, I was wrong. I lied about this. He was unable to bring himself to even a moment of just not being silly and self-aggrandizing about his whole incident. So I was not impressed by the overall performance, but maybe there's a bit of humanity there. I don't know. Steve Baker, investigative journalist and Blaze News opinion contributor. I'm waiting for all the apologies for skipping over your story all these years from the left, Steve.
Right.
Any day.
We'll see.
Any day. Okay. It's coming soon. Steve, say thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Most of us have big backup plans for the big stuff, right? An extra flashlight in the drawer, a spare tire in the trunk, food in the pantry, just in case, right? But when it comes to medicine, we often are caught off guard. Pharmacies can be delayed, shelves can be cleared out overnight, and supply chains break down more often than we'd like to admit. That's where Jace Medical comes in. Through a secure online process, licensed professionals evaluate your needs and, if it's appropriate, send you a Jace case. It is a personal stockpile of emergency antibiotics and vital medications, all carefully labeled with clear instructions written by doctors. No guesswork, no confusion, just peace of mind that you can hold on to. And Jace is expanding their options all the time so your preparedness can keep pace with the real world. The truth is, you can't control the chaos out there, but you can make sure your family is ready for it. And that starts with having the right medicine. So go to Jace.com. Get this done. Use the promo code STU at checkout. You get a discount on your order. It's promo code STU at Jace.com. Jase.com. Promo code STU. Okay. So here's what happened. A shocking development. One of the most unpredictable things possible. Yes, Greta Thunberg and her flotilla is having problems. You see, she was there to fight for Gaza, for the Palestinian, free Palestine, as you know. The problem is they decided to add someone who was queer to the flotilla. And you're going to be very surprised to hear the Free Palestine activists that were already involved in the flotilla did not take kindly to that. Choppy seas, Greta Thunberg's flotilla mutinies after the queer activist joins cause. One person resigned, and then we got this comment as well from others. Palestine is the issue of Muslims first and foremost and cannot be separated from its spiritual and religious dimension. So why do you involve suspicious activists in it who serve other agendas that do not concern us and have no relation to Gaza, such as homosexuals? What do we hear? Why do we hear the voices of suspicious activists that are outcasts? Why you divide people? We don't need someone in a queer movement in our flotilla. What a shocking development that is.